Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker, and we're broadcasting today live from WBUR City Space. I want to welcome our live audience. Thanks for being with us. Also, we'll now introduce our panelists for our Friday Week in Review. Tom Keene is a former Boston City Councilor and regular contributor to WBUR's Ideas and Opinion page, Cognoscenti. Welcome, Tom.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical and a former Boston City Councilor as well. Hi, Tito.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So we're going to start with the Democratic race for president and some of the newest developments there. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg appealed to young people at Northeastern University this week.
You have to hold elected officials responsible. The reason they don't respond to the policy preferences of young people is because they're not afraid of young people. They will be if you fire them.
On the other end of the age spectrum, former Vice President Joe Biden, who is not yet officially in the race, but again addressing a growing number of complaints about making women feel uncomfortable when he touches them.
Social norms have begun to change, they've shifted, and the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it. And I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility.
Meantime, Congressman Tim Ryan announces he's in. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton is still thinking about it. So where does this race stand? So, Tom Keene, I'm wondering what you read on Mayor Buttigieg. Is he catching fire? Is it just sort of flavor of the week here? I mean, we did hear about Beto O'Rourke, and everyone wanted Beto, and now where does he stand? Is it just 15 minutes here?
I'm kind of with the flavor of the week. Mm-hmm. And this race in the Democratic side is shaping up to be just like what we saw 4 years ago on the Republican side. And if you remember back then, it was, you know, you have one crazy candidate after another coming to the top, and all of a sudden that's the person who's the front runner. And then for whatever reason, they collapse. And I'm certainly seeing that right now. And quite frankly, I also think that if I were Donald Trump, I'd be really happy right now in the way that this field is shaping up.
Well, yeah, it sounds like that. Tito, what are your thoughts? Do you think that Buttigieg can turn out young people? Everyone wants the millennials, right?
Yes, and I think... those individuals who have the gravitas, excitement, are going to introduce and bring young people into the mix. I think the Democrats erred last time by trying to socially engineer the race and having Saturday night debates. Not for nothing, I literally watched more hours of Republican debates last go round, don't tell anybody that, it'll be our secret, then Democratic debates. So I think we need to give Mayor Pete his due. I think he's bringing a lot of gravitas and energy to the table, and allow people, this is what Democrats should do, allow people to try to sell themselves to the electorate versus calling them out and cutting them off from day one.
So he's more than flavor of the month.
I like the brother.
Yeah.
Right?
I like him too, Tito. I'm not saying that. I just think you're going to see a whole parade of candidates here who are going to attract some attention from people. They'll rise to the top, and then we're going to kind of go on to the next one.
And that's what this is what we missed last time. We need to vet somebody in the primary. They need to be wholly vetted in the primary. And we missed out on that opportunity last time. And today, Tom and I actually have an announcement that we are both...
We're both running, right?
We're both running right now. So it's up to 26 now.
Yeah. Feels like 86.
Okay.
It really does.
But I want to bring up something again about Buttigieg. Let's go back to him. He's getting some criticism, right, for using the term all lives matter. And this was during his State of the City address in 2015. And here he is in New York yesterday explaining his changing thinking about that term.
Unfortunately, it was not obvious to everybody that black lives were being valued the same. And so that is the contribution of Black Lives Matter, and it's a reason why, since learning about how that phrase was being used to push back on that activism, I've stopped using it in that context.
Your take on that, Tito Jackson?
I think, first, black lives do matter. And it is critical that we have candidates who can evolve in their thinking, that don't have to double down every single time. And by the way, candidates who sometimes say, I'm sorry, that to me shows a maturity, and it's a juxtaposition to what we have on offer in the White House right now. That to me shows leadership, and I give Mayor Pete his props for stepping up and saying that Black Lives Matter.
Not a career destroyer, Tom?
No, not a career destroyer. And I mean, everyone knows that the All Lives Matter formulation was an attempt to put down the Black Lives Matter movement. But I think I agree with Tito, which is, people in public life say things. You're on stage all the time. You're going to say something inappropriate, something wrongheaded. The key thing is to pick up on it, apologize for it, and move on.
Well, let's move on to Vice President Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden. Now, we played a piece of tape from him at the beginning of the program. That was from a video that was posted on Twitter. Do you think that these concerns about what he says are being mindful of boundaries of personal space, are these a career killer? Tito Jackson. Candidacy killer, I suppose I should say.
Well, no, I don't believe, again, I believe that everyone should step to the front and put what they have on offer to everyone. I get it. What he should have said, if I help, I want to help you, Uncle Joe. I'm sorry. Hmm. Right? So an apology there. And then, honestly, the real move there would have been to step the game up and speak about the fact that 1 in 4 women are assaulted in their lifetime. Speak about the fact that men have to step up and take personal responsibility for these interactions and all of the power dynamics that are involved here. So he had an opportunity to step forward and lead. I don't believe that he actually took that opportunity. And I think we get into the minutia about what the person or the intent of the person was when they had that interaction. He has an opportunity still to this day, I believe, to step forward and actually lead in this space. And I think he would have some grounds to do that and get some traction stepping forward in that way.
I want to play a piece of tape here of President Trump. You may have seen the tweet from President Trump. It was mocking Biden's video on Twitter. And this afternoon, President Trump was on the White House lawn and under the roar of a helicopter. This is what he said.
No, I don't see Joe Biden as a threat. No, I don't see him as a threat. I think he's only a threat to himself. I just don't see him as a threat.
Threat to himself.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, is he harming himself by making these statements, these continued statements about what he's doing, and what does that say? Not just, I think, about Biden's candidacy, but sort of our politics right now, too, right?
Right. I think, unfortunately, I really think that Biden's time was 4 years ago, and I really wish he'd gotten into the race then. Instead, as Tito says, it was kind of socially engineered by the Democratic Party, and we just had a nominee that sailed on through. I do think, actually, that this time around, I wouldn't say this is necessarily the career killer, but I think Donald Trump has shown himself to be a master at tearing into people for the slightest of reasons and bringing them down. And I really fear that Biden would be in that position, even though, of course, Trump has no position to talk about how well he treats women. It doesn't matter. He just goes on the attack.
But I think Donald Trump oftentimes, when he tries to address the issue, like in this case, I think he's deathly afraid of Joe Biden. I really do.
Really?
I think that in Donald Trump's mind, Joe Biden would be someone that would be formidable to him. And again, when Donald Trump says one thing, I have a tendency to believe that he probably means the other.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right in the sense that there's a lot of candidates that seem to be coming from the coast, and we already know the coasts are going to vote Democratic. Biden does have that ability to appeal more to middle America.
Right. Well, you know, we also have a piece of tape from Biden, and this is from today. He was speaking in Washington to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Construction Conference, and he gave someone a hug on stage, and this was a joke he gave after. Let's listen.
I just want you to know, I had permission to hug Lonnie.
So when you hear something like that, do you say, is he not getting it here? Or is that being overly sensitive? Because you know people will say that, right? He made a joke about this. Not a joke. It's not funny. He doesn't get it. Thoughts there, Tom?
I think that to a degree he doesn't get it. Mm-hmm. And I think this actually hurts him. I think there are clearly people out there who are very offended by his behavior personally. There's also some who are not. But I think he does, by making a joke of it and making light of it, he's making light of what they say is their own hurt.
And it's important to take this serious. And it's important as a leader to lead in this space. And in particular, in a day and age that we look at all of the disparities across the board around gender, it is critical that someone who served in that role as vice president step forward and show guys how to lead. Challenge other men. Challenge men who are making decisions about board of directors, making decisions about hiring, making decisions about pay. So he has to take it serious. And if he chooses not to take it serious, then I do believe he could easily become a candidate of the past. Step up now and do the right thing in this space.
You think he's going to run?
Come on. I think he has a lifetime pension, right?
Right, yes.
So
yes,
I don't think he's kind of just doing this.
Well, there are some people saying this morning he's not going to. This is going to push him out. You guys
so he just, okay. Just wanted to stop by because were his lights blinking?
Well, I think the way I'd formulate that is that he is running until he tells you that he's not running. Hmm. He hasn't made an official announcement. But at any point, people can withdraw from a race. Absolutely, at this point, he is running.
Okay. Somebody who we don't know that for certain yet, Congressman Seth Moulton, Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, he's said to be considering a run. He's been going around the country, going to some of the important states, and he was on the NPR show 1A this week, again, saying he hasn't decided yet, but I want to listen to a little bit of that program. Let's listen.
We need a president who understands that patriotism means service, that leadership requires moral courage, to make sure that every American has a job in the new economy, not the old, to get weapons of war off our streets, and to make sure that our planet doesn't have an expiration date, to make sure that Americans are safe and secure and America is strong in the world. It's going to be hard.
That sounds to me like a candidate. What are your thoughts?
I listened to all those descriptions of what he thinks we need to have in a president, and I am betting that Seth Moulton thinks he fits all of that, right? I mean, I think he's going to run.
And I see from a lot of the people in the audience here today, they're shaking their head. I also think, you know, the fact that he's a veteran, the fact that he has uplifted other veterans into the ranks of elected officials, and the fact that he has also been willing to step up inside the Democratic Party and challenge folk. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley also had to step up as recent as this past week to say the DCCC and to push the party to do the right thing. Those are it's. I think oftentimes easier to lead externally and really difficult to lead internally inside your party. And I think Seth Moulton has distinguished himself in that space. And I don't. He's kind of handsome too.
Well, okay. But let's.
And he's got better hair than our current president.
He's got better hair than our current president. Well, okay. Well, I want to talk about another member of our local delegation. This is Congressman Richard Neal, chair of House Ways and Means, requested 6 years of the president's tax returns and those from his companies. We have he spoke with WBUR, and we have a little bit of the tape of him making that request. Let's listen.
This is really about policy and not about politics. I think Democratic presidents as well as Republican presidents ought to release their tax forms. We tried very hard to refrain from even linking it to the Mueller report, which we did not.
Tito Jackson, is this a wise move on the part of Democrats?
I absolutely believe it's a wise move on the part of the Democrats. This has been a lingering issue over the course of time. It also speaks to transparency and really the question as to whether or not, one, is he as rich as he says he is? But two, has there been bad acts on behalf of the president as well as his companies? We all get, and even as a local elected official, I'm not even going to talk about my parking tickets, right? So we all are vetted. And this is the one person from an economic perspective who still is not vetted. And by the way, whose kids are working in the White House, still making millions and millions of dollars from these Trump companies. It has to happen. It's the right play. And they should push it all the way up to whatever court and make the courts rule on this issue.
Yeah. So I think when Richie Neal says this isn't about politics, it's about policy, he's not speaking the truth, obviously. Mm-hmm. This is about politics. This is about a way for the Democrats to try to hurt Donald Trump, maybe by showing he's not that rich, maybe by showing he's fudged on a variety of things. I have no idea what. I am not. I am certain that Trump is going to fight this way, this as far as he can possibly fight this, and I actually think he'll win. I mean, it's interesting. The Constitution tells you what the qualifications for a candidate have to be. And I think that the way a court would ultimately rule is that you can't start to impose new qualifications, such as releasing your tax returns, in order to be president. Even though we may be able to do it for almost every other governor and state rep and state senators, I suspect you won't be able to do it for president.
Okay, I want to make sure we have enough time to do some local political stories this week. Massachusetts Republicans and their strong words about a Democratic bill that would expand access to abortions. Among the things that that bill would do, remove parental consent requirements that are now in place in this state. And the state Republican Party chair, Jim Lyons, wrote a letter and described the bill as radical infanticide. Governor Charlie Baker has said he does not favor any new exceptions for abortions after 24 weeks, which this bill would provide. And also, at the same time, he signed an emergency bill this week to replace federal funding, replace federal family planning funding. So I want to play a little bit here of the governor, because I want to talk about the spot that he might find himself in if the head of the Republican Party in Massachusetts is being so critical. Let's listen to the governor.
I don't believe in questioning motives. I don't believe in questioning character. And I think the inflated language that exists on all sides in politics has made it much harder for people to do the work that they're supposed to do on behalf of the people they serve and they represent. And I do support current law here in Massachusetts, and always have, and will defend it, but I don't support late-term abortion.
So is Charlie Baker in a tough spot here, Tito Jackson?
Well, he's the governor. He's always in a tough spot. Right? But I think the Progressive Caucus has done a lot of really good work, not only on this issue and bringing forward these issues, but issues across the board that we have not actually been speaking about. And so I believe that when we look at issues like parental consent and these obstacles that women have, I think there needs to be some progress in that space. But the real question is, how does the governor navigate with his party, as well as obviously most of the Democrats there? It is a difficult space, but I also think it shows the strength of the progressive side and caucus at the state house right now that did really well in this past election and are able to move issues in ways that had not been moved before.
So you don't think that this is sort of maybe the local GOP being emboldened by what's happening nationally?
I think it's completely the local mm-hmm. GOP being emboldened. Mm-hmm. This infanticide thing, and that's the hot button issue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the consent for under 18 is nowhere near as flagrant an issue, and it's not going to get people as upset as the so-called infanticide issue, the late-term abortion thing. It worked really well in Virginia, right? And the governor got really humiliated by it. And I think the GOP really is seeing that this is potentially a reviving a wedge issue, a classic wedge issue. I thought it was interesting. I think clearly Baker feels that pressure. His comments were really interesting because he said, I don't want to get into sort of all the rhetoric around this. Hmm. But it's also quite clear he's coming down on the Republican side, at least as now being voiced, of not changing the law at all. I happen to think he's incorrect on that, but I think he's really feeling that pressure.
You know, we spoke with the former head of the Mass GOP, Jennifer Nassour, on this program this week. And I want you to listen to a little bit of what she said about perhaps a more conservative shift within the Massachusetts Republican Party. She said, actually, she feels that the party is no longer the party that she came from. So let's listen.
Charlie Baker is still the head of the party, despite the fact that Jim Lyons was elected. And Jim Lyons was elected by a majority, a substantial majority of the state committee. But that state committee is represented by 80 men and women. And that's a small population of people who consider themselves Republicans. And I think that the typical Republican still in Massachusetts is a person who is fiscally conservative and socially more libertarian.
You agree with that, Tom? Is that, would you say that that's accurate? We still have, pretty socially liberal Republicans. I can't remember the joke about a Republican in Massachusetts, but I know that many folks say they'd be a Democrat in most other states.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is a unique breed of Republican that we have here in Massachusetts. We have a unique history of governors who have reflected that, right? I mean, from Bill Weld and Frank Sargent, and going back quite a bit. But within Massachusetts, it's quite clear within the GOP, there is this growing, more conservative wing that is increasingly vocal and is increasingly seizing power and is increasingly willing to challenge Charlie Baker. They call Charlie Baker the Rhino, Republican in name only. Mm-hmm. And that is the criticism that they're leveling at him. Charlie Baker really is a Democrat as far as I'm concerned. He managed to get in as a Republican, but almost everything he has done really reflects the fact that he is probably a moderate Democrat.
I want to just bring something up, though, because this is an interesting story this week. The Baker administration pushing back against newly elected Suffolk County DA Rachel Rollins, and she put out a new policy statement, 65 pages of policies last week, saying her office will dismiss some low-level offenses. She's going to push for diversion to try to reduce mass incarceration. And so we hear from Charlie Baker's Secretary of Public Safety, Tom Turco, this week, saying that those policies could cause all kinds of problems, put kids at risk, compromise efforts to protect crime victims, worsen the opioid epidemic. And really, he thinks she should scale those back a bit. Tito Jackson, your thoughts on that?
First, I do need to disclose that I helped Rachel Rollins on her campaign. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is Rachel Rollins is duly elected. And she was recently elected, vetted by the people of the county. And this was central to what she ran on. And so when we think about the $60,000 a year that we spend incarcerating people, and most of the time incarcerating people based on things related to poverty or addiction, that's what she's speaking about. In Suffolk County, there's over 1,000 unsolved murders in the city of Boston. The resources need to go to the higher level crimes, and we're not saying, and I don't believe she's saying that people should not be held accountable, but there are different ways that don't require individuals to be incarcerated or go through the courts or be locked up. We lag behind as a state relative to criminal justice reform, and we even lag behind some of the southern states, such as Texas and other states. We have a lot of work to do here, and if we're serious about criminal justice reform, we actually have to support Rachel Rollins in this space.
But I was talking with someone about this, someone who was a very strong supporter of hers, mm-hmm. Just last week after her 65-page policy proposal came out, and he said, he's really concerned. He thought she might be underestimating the how sophisticated some people might be to try to get around things and be diverted. And if they don't have the threat of incarceration hanging over their head, it could lead to lawlessness.
There's really two pieces to what her proposal is. One is diversion, which is, in other words, the penalty is not going to jail, but is some other penalty, community service, fines, restitution, what have you. The second piece is her decision to make a whole category of crimes that she will not prosecute under any circumstances, that the default position is I'm not going to prosecute. That, I think, becomes the vastly more controversial element here. So when she says, you shoplift, we're not going to prosecute. Malicious destruction of property, we're not going to prosecute. Intent to distribute drugs, we're not going to prosecute. That basically gives free rein to people to say, well, then there's no penalty whatsoever to do it. I think that's going to become a political hot button.
But didn't she say these things before she got elected?
She said them during her campaign.
Right.
And she said them, and if you want to go back to the Boston Herald, you see her getting hit on these issues. So when it comes down to, and this is, again, people are duly elected. They ran a campaign, put these issues forward, and if we truly believe in criminal justice reform, if we truly believe in moving our city forward and not putting continuing to lock folks up and throw away the key, understand, by the way, it also she also states if you harm someone, you're getting locked up. So there's not this, there has to be the tools in order to take care of and focus on the higher level crimes and also do right by and give opportunities, chances, and help to those individuals who are on the lower level.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you, just because she was duly elected doesn't mean people can't push back on it. Donald Trump told us he was going to build a wall. Doesn't mean people are going to push back on it because he was duly elected. No, seriously.
But it's March. It's March.
Right.
She just got into office.
And she just put out this 60-page mm-hmm. memo, which I have actually read the entire thing. And I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. I followed that election very closely. Yes, she had floated the idea out there, but it sounded more like diversion. Now it really is sounding like you'll get off scot-free. And the default position, if you run a retail store, and she is saying shoplifting is okay. It's going to be tough to run a retail store.
I just got to tell you one story. A young man in Tedeschi's, his buddies decide to snatch some stuff from there. The owner won't give him his $20 back. Hmm. He gets in a fight with the owner, he wins the fight. He gets a charge of assault with a deadly weapon, shot foot, armed robbery. This young man was sentenced, I think they gave him 10 years. He spent 6 years in the DDU unit. This young man was in a unit for other people, for people who assault other prisoners. He came out, and he now has 4 years on his probationary time. He was 17 when this happened.
And by the way,
he didn't get a plea. He had to serve the whole amount of time. His life is inextricably and irreversibly changed based on what's happening, and we have to have people like Rachel Rollins who are willing to step forward and have a backbone, and change is going to cause pushback, but I agree with the fact that she needs to step forward and do the right thing
right,
by
but plainly the right circumstance. In the case you describe, what should have been done was a diversion program, obviously not put into incarceration. But they really are two separate issues. One is the diversion. One is the decision not to prosecute at all. That's, I think, the thing that's going to become the hot
button.
And I think
we are going to probably have this debate more in the future. Rachel Rollins, I think, is actually having a press conference about this at 4 o'clock today that WBUR is covering. So this will continue to be an issue. So we're going to have to stop it there. But I want to thank both of you for being with us. Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor, regular contributor to WBUR's Ideas and Opinion page, Cognoscenti. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical and a former Boston City Councilor as well. Thanks to you.
RIP to Nipsey Hussle.